The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff.
Previously on Outside the Box.
I thought Michelle Obama came off very well. I interviewed her one-on-one. She's a very positive, energetic woman, smiling. Now, she brought the girls up. She's got 7 and 10-year-old daughters, and they came up and they had the shot of Barack on the screen, and that kind of... I thought, what are they doing with him? This is her night, and then they bring him up, and he didn't know what city he was in, but that's, you know, Kansas City, St. Louis, you know, they're everywhere. And the kids had the microphones. That was calculated. They had, and they, I love you, Daddy. Where are you, Daddy? What state are you in? This kind of thing. Now, obviously, it went over well in the convention, and I thought the children were sincere. But this was clearly a calculated move to show the family wholesomeness of the Obamas.
Welcome to Outside the Box with Mitch Henk. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll free at 877-235-1310 or email mitch@wiba.com. Now here's your host, Mitch Henk, on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Didn't make me sound very good. No, of course the children were sincere. The children are adorable. There's no question about it. By the way, I think Carville was wrong last night. They had to do the warm human thing last night. They come out slugging. It would have made them look, it would have made them look angry, and it would have put people off. Hillary tonight, I'm not sure how that's going to work. She's going to have to be positive to keep her political aspirations alive. And then Bill tomorrow night, that's going to be interesting. Bill will talk about himself and his record and all he did for the world. I'm sure that'll be happening. The word is that he and Obama are really, he's very angry at Obama, and that'll be interesting. And now Hillary's talking about also after the roll call goes on Thursday night for a certain amount of time, she'll interrupt the roll call and ask that they all go to Obama before he speaks out at the stadium. Now, Ted Kennedy, we haven't talked about that, which the networks did not apparently run his entire speech. It went before they went on, and so they showed clips. They did not show the entire speech, which could have been seen on the cable networks. And is it right to say at this point that the people that hate Ted Kennedy and conservatives who obviously can't stand him politically and have problems with him personally, there seems to be kind of a ceasefire because he has brain cancer? I'm sensing that there's a ceasefire out there and people are showing some humanity toward the senator, which I think is appropriate. It's sort of like Reagan in the last 5 years. Notice how liberals would start saying good things about Reagan. I mean, you're not going to say bad things about Reagan in the last 5 years of his life. I mean, just forget about it if you're a liberal. So I think that probably was at play last night. And frankly, you had to. There's something about the tenacity of the Kennedys. I mean, they just keep coming at you. And Ted Kennedy with the chemotherapy. I mean, frankly, it was amazing that he went out there and like John Colbert reported, the full head of hair and all that, and he sounded pretty good in terms of his tone and his energy level. I think people, even who look at the Kennedys with disdain, marvel their tenacity over the years. And so I think that was probably at play last night. Now, we move on to John McCain, who was on Leno last night. Now, it's often been said about World War II veterans, World War I veterans, Korean War, they did a lot of veterans in those earlier wars did things that are absolutely heroic and in many cases unspeakable. What they saw was horrific, and they don't often like to talk about what they saw. We've had a number of books in recent years about Iwo Jima, about other aspects of World War II where, you know, they don't want to talk about it, and then when they'll say, okay, I'll give you 10 minutes on the phone when my wife goes to the store, and then they start crying. They can't do it because it's too painful, those combat experiences and their war experiences. I mean, James Garner, the actor, apparently did some really good stuff in Korea. I never knew that. He doesn't talk about it. There are a number of other veterans that did things you just wouldn't – they don't know about it. They don't talk about it. There's something about a humility there. Now, with McCain, he went on the Tonight Show – and let's go through some of these sound bites, and then we'll get to the POW stuff and wonder whether he's using that too frequently. McCain was there, and they were kind of needling each other for a while. But he did touch on his time during the Vietnam War when he was imprisoned after Leno had asked him as a joke, "I'll give you $1 million if you can tell me how many houses you got." Okay, let's go ahead and take a listen.
I spent 5.5 years in a prison cell I didn't have a house. I didn't have a kitchen table. I didn't have a table. I didn't have a chair.
Well, he did that with Katie Couric as well in response to this whole thing about the houses. He didn't have a chair. So he uses the same thing as a talking point. Now, McCain, first of all, has my undying respect. He was an incredible figure, a war hero, shot down over North Vietnam, 5.5 years in the prisoner of war camp, or in a prison. He didn't take the opportunity to leave early because his father, I guess, could have arranged it. He said no. All those things. I mean, he can't even raise his arm above his eyes. He cannot comb his hair because of his injuries. And he was tortured, and there's no question about it. But I don't know that, you know, is he overplaying it? I mean, he's on Leno, and he uses it. He does it with Katie Couric. He did it at the Saddleback Church. Throws out there the POW stuff. I don't want to get to the point where if he's asked about the economy or if he's asked about the weather, he goes to his POW story. Now, he and Leno were joking about a running mate. Let's listen to that.
I can make more doing a week in Vegas.
But it's hard.
Yeah, it's a lousy job for the money.
Oh, but the house is nice. The house is nice.
Yeah, but you got enough of those.
There you go. Oh,
you need a white one, too? Come on.
Well, I mean, they're joking a little bit. Now, McCain is expected to announce his VP pick Friday. Could come on Thursday. Let's see. Obama says McCain is out of touch because of the homes. McCain painted a different picture last night on
Monday. I'm proud of my record of service to this country, and it has nothing to do with houses. What it has to do with putting Americans in houses and keeping them in their homes.
Okay. So the question about this POW story, and it is an incredible story, and I have tremendous respect for McCain, and I actually voted for McCain in 2000 when he was running against George W. Bush. I've always sort of liked McCain. Now, he's had some bobs and weaves and turns in the road since then. But is he, and some of it is, I'm sure, his advisors, but is he overplaying the POW card? What do you think? 321-1310 outside the Madison area, 877-235-1310. Is he playing it too much, going to the well with it too often? Or is it going to get to the point where the solemn nature of it, the sacred nature of it, the wrenching human aspect of that is going to be lost if it's just used as a political talking point? I didn't have a house, didn't have a table, didn't have a chair, didn't have a house. You know, he says it to Saddleback, to Rick Warren. He says it to Katie Couric. He says it to Jay Leno when asked on a joke, which to me would have been a place to make another joke because McCain is humorous. He does have a sharp wit, and you're going on Leno. So what do you think? Or am I being too cynical? Is McCain overplaying the POW card? Or am I just too cynical and full of it, which, you know, I think that goes without saying. Charles, this is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Charles.
Mitch, I just don't think McCain can, if he said it every day, I don't think he could overplay it. To spend 5 years in hell is unbelievable.
Well, we can't even imagine, can we, Charles, what that would have been like. But it's so... But you know what I'm saying? These people, a lot of veterans have done a lot of horrible things and seen horrible things and don't often talk about it. Granted, you'd want to have that be a very sensitive and personal story, but you don't want it to be out there like a political slogan or points.
It's just come up recently on his part, and everybody's known about it forever.
Oh, sure.
I mean, he's got sons in combat. He doesn't bring that up.
That's true. He does not. His son, who just returned from his duty in Iraq, and doesn't talk about that, which, you know, we should hear more about that, I think. I just don't want him to talk about it and have his advisors have him use it as some just a political set of talking points to the point where the impact of it is lost.
Well, I don't think that'll happen. I think they'll go on to another talking point tomorrow. So that's all I had to say, Charles.
Thank you very much. Willie, hi. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Willie.
Good morning, Mitch. He is using it too much. You know, I mean, his actions may have been, although there are other stories around. There are, you know, there are many of his fellow veterans that were there that said that he was the guy who was getting special favors from the Vietnamese because he was
Well, you just don't ever cease to amaze me, Willie.
I know.
He can't comb his hair, Willie. Well, of course you can say it, but I mean, there's got to be a level of decency that goes with the comb.
Not in 2004. Yes, I realize. I'm trying to be decent about this.
Thing. Okay, go ahead.
You know, and you know, he did bomb civilians in an illegal and immoral war. He behaved well after that, but my problem with him vis-a-vis Vietnam. Is he is another one, and I don't want a guy like this in the White House who believes we could have won Vietnam. It was a noble cause.
Well, you know, this is not. But see, Willie, we're not talking about your historical perspective on the Vietnam War here. We're talking about McCain and this very touching personal story, using it as a campaign technique, and that now we're getting
going to use it. Well, if he's going to continue to use it that much, he's got to develop some different storylines about it.
All right, thank you very much, Willie, because if I didn't go to the commercial, you'd continue to talk. I'm sure you'll call during the break. Rob is next. We'll come back. Is McCain overplaying this card? And it's not about anybody's geopolitical views about the Vietnam War, Willie. It's about 2008 and how this is going to play out. News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Always just minutes away from Madison's First News. Now more Outside the Box with Mitch Henk on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, we're talking about McCain, and I'm sure this is driven by his advisors. McCain, of course, has been very humble. As the caller just said, he's been talking about his son in Iraq. I don't think he used the POW stuff in 2000 that much. I mean, we knew about it. But I mean, he used it with Katie Couric. He used it with Rick Warren. You know, he's using it everywhere he goes. He used it on Leno, and I'm wondering if he's going to it too much. We'll get your calls. 321-1310 outside the Madison area. 877-235-1310. Talking about the Rudy Giuliani. Oh, okay, good question. Somebody wants to compare that to 9/11 with Rudy. Rob. Good morning. Welcome to Outside the Box, Rob.
Willie's a little out there this morning, huh?
Well, I just didn't want to get into the whole geopolitical perspective on the Vietnam War.
Yeah, that was a different issue altogether there. Mm-hmm. My thing is about his handlers. This whole issue started after he answered a question in that forum talking about what he defines as rich, and he said that they're going to use this against me. I don't understand why he said that. I think after he said that, when he explained what he was talking about income and how he thinks every American should have that way and don't raise taxes on small business. That stuff is stuff that he should be saying. Save the POW stuff for when he's actually at a debate face-to-face with Obama. He's using that card too much. He's got other stuff he can use, and he knows it. Thanks.
Okay, Rob, thank you. You see, you know what I'm saying here? Because then if he brings it up again and again and again and again, then we're going to say, you know, this was a very sacred thing. We don't want to be – this is not something – that should be politicized, other than to talk about your life, your worldview, and you have to do it in a way that is compelling. Like he did it, he used it effectively, I think, on that Rick Warren Saddleback Church appearance. Dick, hi, this is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Dick.
Hey, good morning, Mitch.
Hi.
And I think that experience of any politician is something that they should always use. And with McCain bringing up the fact that he was a POW, a Vietnam era, quite frankly, I hope he keeps bringing it up, because what it does in part is underlines the inexperience of Obama and with McCain's life experiences. And he can relate his experience as being a prisoner to just about any subject or issue. In the 5 years that he was behind bars there, There was many, many instances that can be aligned with something that's going on right now. And I think it's really important, and it's not overdone. It's not overblown.
Dick, let me ask you this, because if he brings it up again and again and again and again, and he's on the debates, and he says, well, for 5.5 years, I didn't have a table or I didn't have a chair.
Sure.
And if people have heard it 8 times, doesn't it start to make it seem like he's using it too much? And keep in mind, Dick, Winston Churchill, who literally helped the British survive their darkest and most desperate hours, got them through the Battle of Britain, got them through Dunkirk, got them through the constant air raids, and he lost in 1945. I mean, right when the war was over, they threw him out. So, because when you talk about war too much, I mean, it just starts to, I guess wear people out.
And people will get tired of hearing the same stories all the time. And I agree with you there, because there's many issues that can be discussed by McCain and Obama.
Yeah, he needs to talk about and act like he really is on top of the economic stuff at some point, is my point.
Absolutely.
I mean, remember, George Bush the first had approval of 91%, Dick, after the Gulf War. Remember that? He had 90% approval, and then he lost.
Yes, very quickly, over just a couple of issues. And the economy was one of the primary ones. Mm-hmm. And certainly, McCain should not be really bringing up the topic of his being prisoner of war unless it fits. And whenever it fits,
right. Well,
I don't think there's anything wrong with
You've
that.
You've got to be very selective about it and do it in the appropriate way. Thank you, Dick. Jeff, News Talk 1310 WIB. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Mitch. Hey, I don't think you really have to go too far back. You could go to John Kerry. It became a joke, you know, every
right.
time he came up and he mentioned that he fought in Vietnam, and everybody, you know, was like, oh, he fought in Vietnam.
Reporting for duty, You know, again, and I'm not dissing Kerry because he
was... No, that's the point.
But the point is he did talk about it all the time.
Now, I think where John McCain should bring it up is have people, you know, that support him bring it up, not
right.
him.
Right. And we should also point out that McCain did a lot more than Kerry did in Vietnam.
Oh, correct.
I mean, you can't compare the two. But Kerry just used that big time. You know, he did the salute, John Kerry reporting for duty, and he always had his comrades with him everywhere he went. Of course, then there were all those controversies and charges against him and his record. But in this case, you're right. Have the surrogates do it. But you know what? If he talks about it too much, then it's going to just underscore the fact that he's not talking about the economy.
Else. And you can even look at Rudy Giuliani. He spent his whole career talking about 9/11. And even though that was a great thing he did, it pegged him, you know, to that's all he is.
All right. Excellent point. Thanks, Jeff. Let's go to quickly one more call before the break. Arlene, News Talk 1310 WIB. Good morning, Arlene.
Yes, Mitch. It came to my mind that it's always said that the American people have to hear something at least 5 times before it sinks in. And I guess the other thing I thought about when I heard that last night was the fact that after he made that statement, I thought he brought up another very valid point, was the fact that his father-in-law had worked, struggled very hard, was in the service, came back, and that's when he made the money, and that it really was his wife's money. So I guess, you know, him saying it, like I say, the American people, and there are a lot of people that still don't realize that.
Okay, well, I mean, there's a certain point where I think you have to be careful that you don't just make it a political thing rather than the wrenching personal story that it was. Thanks, Arlene, for the call. Come back. This referendum vote last night, my take and yours when we come back. It's Outside the Box.
Now back to Outside the Box.
All guests on Outside the Box appear courtesy of the Charter phone line, part of the Charter bundle package.
Once again, here's Mitch Henk on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right. The school referendum last night, the school board, I guess there were 10 people there. Chandra was telling me, talking to news, roughly. Looking at TV covering it. And again, people have lives, and I don't think anybody that's astute thought that the school board would not vote to send this question to the voters in November about a referendum that would allow the district to permanently exceed state revenue limits by $5 million in the 2009-10 year, $4 million more in the next year, an additional $4 million the following year, total of 13 million, which means that then forever you're dealing with a base of that much more, and then that goes into your taxes, and also the fact that the state, the school district becomes even more of a rich district by spending so much money, which means they have to give so much more to the poorer districts in the negative aids plan. So it's almost like at some point it becomes 60 cents on the dollar leaving. And it ultimately means more taxes. And they're trying to say they've got some accounting gimmicks to lessen the burden by freeing up the Fund 80 amount, $2 million, and all these different things. And they're trying to find savings. Actually, even watchdog Don Severson gives the new superintendent NERAD points for trying to make things a little more honest and open in discussion. But we'll go to some of the coverage from last night, and then I'll have my take on it and the big picture here and how this in the end comes down to backbone in a moment. But the district it has 2 months to convince the voters now, because it's going to be in the ballot. They voted unanimously last night. School board member Lucy Mathiak says accounting moves approved as part of the proposal would increase the amount of aid the school district receives from the state, saving local property taxpayers' money.
We are not coming to the community saying give us the money or this group gets whacked or that group gets whacked when we do the budget. We're coming to you to say work with us to solve a very critical problem for our schools.
Now, in the first year, they say, the operating referendum would add about an additional $28 under the property tax bill of a $250,000 home. Severson, Don Severson, watchdog, doesn't quite agree with that amount, but this is what they're saying. It's a $43 increase the second year and a $21 increase the third year. So you have to add all that up, and then it'll just continue out from that point forward. The vote will be November 4th. Now, Ed Hughes, who's on the board, recently elected, by the way, along with Marjorie Passman, in the two open seats where nobody else ran, says the plan is needed to head off projected multi-million dollar budget shortfalls.
There simply aren't areas to cut without doing significant damage to classroom learning.
Okay, so you're talking about adding those increases up, $91 more in property taxes on that median home. But Marge Passman, by the way, who was also elected recently to an open seat, was on my show last week and said that we haven't spent any money on education since Sputnik, which was a bizarre thing to say, says that it's only one part of the school funding solution.
We still need to petition our state and federal governments for a change in property tax funding to another means of support for our schools.
So when she says we haven't spent any money on education since Sputnik, I think she's talking about federal money and state money. She's complaining about mandates that are put on local districts that are not funded by state and federal governments. But clearly it was a shocking portrayal. Johnny Winston Jr. weighs in.
We are doing the right thing. No question about it.
Yeah. And Arlene Silvera is the president. She, of course, is also on board with this. Oh, and we had a frozen computer. All right, here's the thing. And we don't have to have that soundbite. I mean, there are a couple of things going on here. One is the big picture, and Marjorie Passman touched on it. The way we fund schools, you know, has always bothered me, relying on property wealth. I don't get that. You can't blame the kid if he lives in a poor district, if it's urban poor or rural poor district. And then the kid that lives in Door County or Mequon, you're going to have more bang for the buck. You're going to have more money. And they try to equalize it, but the per pupil spending in Milwaukee is still less than obviously it is in Mequon. I mean, it's not even a question. I did a story on this a few years ago when this was a Supreme Court case in the state, whether the inequity of public school funding was unconstitutional. And Milwaukee per pupil spending at that time, even with all the aid from the state, was still less than it was in the Middleton Cross Plains district. I mean, if you're going to talk about who has more need, we went to a school in Milwaukee where kids were dropped off by their single mom at 6 a.m. for daycare in the school and then picked up at 6 p.m. After school daycare. To go home where she would have to make dinner and all this kind of stuff. And there, you've got all kinds of concentrations of poverty, and whether you can say who needs the most support, you'd make a case that in this school we visited, they could use all the help they can get. We're basing it on property wealth. That's always bothered me. I know Senator Erpenbach wants to take the schools off the property tax. It'd be nice if the property tax just was a local tax that dealt with services affecting your property. Wouldn't that be nice? We'd have to figure out how to pay for it. Whether it's state sales and income taxes, we'd have to maintain local control somehow with site-based committees in schools where they would deal with the local issues in the school, principals, teachers, and faculty. When it came to curriculum, you'd have to have some sort of system of funneling the money to special needs kids through the Department of Public Instruction. But the point of it is people can't afford forever to pay these property taxes. If you're seniors and you're on fixed incomes, you often pay more in property taxes than you do for your original mortgage when you got the house. You know, that has to be addressed. Now, on the spending side, given the fact that 84% of the money goes to salaries and benefits, not just of teachers, but of all staff, administrators, and the rest, you then have to say, okay, let's show some backbone when it comes to the collective bargaining agreements. Now, again, I say I have great respect and admiration for John Matthews. He's the union leader in Madison, and he does a great job. He does what he's paid to do. But I will say again that if you've got a contract that says we're going to have a premium for WPS, the health plan, that costs $2,000 a month, and 40% of the teachers are on it, and we have other teachers on group health, which costs $1,000 a month less, we cannot say to the taxpayers that we're going to do that because we have to attract talent, that somehow those teachers that are on group health are less talented, that somehow they aren't as good a teacher. Now, Mitch, yes, but you keep misconstruing this, Mitch, because if you don't give it in terms of the health benefit, you're going to have to give that money back to the teacher in the form of wages. And why is that? Mitch says, because you gave that away in your collective bargaining agreement, didn't you? If you said, look, we don't have any money, we've got this nice group health plan, if you just go to that, we'll save $900,000 a month district-wide. That's right. Just shy of $1 million a month. Okay, so let's say we save $10 million a year by that. Okay, we say in the contract negotiations, you know what, and we're going to put that money, that savings, in the general fund. Union says, no, that's unacceptable. We're not going to go for that. Okay, fine. Let's go to an arbitrator and let the arbitrator decide. Now, is anybody out there going to tell me that the insurance that people get through the HMO, the group health HMO, is bad insurance? Does somebody want to raise their hand and make that point that's bad insurance? I don't think it is. And if you're going to save $900,000 a month or whatever the money, give it a couple of bucks, that's a lot of money. Now, if you're going to say we're going to put that in the general fund, well, in the next round of collective bargaining talks in the spring, the union, of course, would say no if the board ever had the backbone to do that. But guess what? The board did not do that last time in the last round of collective bargaining talks. The union had 4 votes. There's 7 members. Now, you had 3 members of the board who actually wanted an arbitrator on the table on that. Mathiak, Kubza, and Cole, I believe. And correct me if I'm wrong on that last point. But and they lost. But, I mean, that's where the money is. That's where the money goes. So if you want to deal with the big issue on the spending side, you've got to deal with those costs. That's a lot of money. And you've got to say to the public, okay, you know, we don't think that it's bad insurance for this plan that costs $980 a month in the premium versus the one that's $2,000 a month. And this is what we're going to do. And we're going to let an arbitrator decide on this because those are the cards we have to play. But no, the board does not play that card. The board doesn't even test the arbitration process. Now, that means the union wins. And to the credit of Matthews and the union, you know, good for them. They're doing what they have to do to win. That's what they should do. Fine. They're playing their cards. When they took away, under Tommy Thompson, when they took away binding arbitration, it was taken away from the picture. That's when you had cost controls and QEOs in effect, which meant that school boards only had to go to 3.8% in salaries and benefits to avoid arbitration. Even when they took the cards away from Matthews, the board back in the 90s would cave, and they would cave, and they would cave. And when they had that job action, I don't know, it was about 12 years ago or so, and people would picket the workplaces of board members to where they would be crying. You know, that's hardball. A lot of people would call in sick, whatever would happen. And I asked Matthews then, I was a reporter, I go, John, what if the board said to you, you know, we like you, John, but you're not going to win this one because we have the cards. I mean, Tommy took away binding arbitration. We've got the cards now, and you're not going to win this one. He'd say that'd be a mistake. Of course it would be, because he'd have the job actions. He'd send everybody out there. They would do whatever they have to do, but the board would cave, and the board always caves when it comes to this kind of big stuff. The other point is nobody runs. You know, we had two open seats on this board of seven seats. Severson, who's the watchdog, who now apparently gets along better with these members rather than the time when he was having to deal with Juan Jose Lopez and Carol Carstensen and other members, and Bill Keyes, he's getting along with these new members better. But the point of it is he talked to 20 people. 20 people about running for one of those two seats, two open seats in the last spring election. Ed Hughes and Marjorie Passman ran. Of course, they're very liberal and, you know, obviously going to give the union the vote when it comes to these big issues like collective bargaining or going to an arbitrator. 20 people he talked to, nobody would run. Not a soul. Not a single soul would run. So you see, when all these issues, finally the rubber hits the road, you've got this new superintendent who's trying desperately to make it transparent. Give him credit. He's trying to make some accounting changes and deal with it. You've got the board saying we can't cut these programs, but the issue is, you know, in the spring when they go back and do a new contract, somebody has to say, look, here's how much money we have. Here's what we're offering. We don't have any more money. Okay, so if you don't agree to it, we'll go to an arbitrator. Now, the fact that they won't do that makes it very difficult for them to say to us that they don't have any money. We'll come back. News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Exercise your right to freedom of speech. Call now at 321-1310 or toll free at 1-877-235-1310. Or sound off on today's topic on the web at WIBA.com. Now, here's your host, Mitch Henk, on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, we're back talking about the Madison schools. They want to go to a referendum and raise the revenue caps permanently by millions of dollars. $13 million would raise the baseline, which raises the tax, which increases the money that we send out in negative aids. They can move the money around. The big question is this. You can't – yes, the money for last year's programs will not be enough next year if we're giving the money to the labor contract and to the fuel costs and to other costs that go with schools. So, yes, there should be a cost analysis of all the programs to see whether we should continue them or make changes or consolidations, of course. But you do have a built-in problem given costs and given, you know, the special ed and all the needs that are out there for the students. The need being greater. So we have to take a look at, A, how we fund it, which I think we should think about moving to an alternative source, namely sales and income taxes, maintaining local control. Or we look at some of the big picture items, and you have to go to where the money is, 84% to salaries and benefits. I've outlined the difference in the plans between group health and WPS. And the fact that in the last contract talks, they did not have enough votes, did not have the four votes to go to an arbitrator. They don't have the backbone to do that, even though it would save, there's like more than like $900,000 a month difference in the cost. They also put in the contract that if you don't give it in benefits, it has to go into salaries. It seems to me that that's a very, you can make sure that there are, teachers get a great insurance plan for much, much less money. and you say that we take the savings and we put it into the general fund, and if the union says no, which it would, you go to an arbitrator. I mean, there's only so much money, and then you can't go back and say we don't have any money. Jim, hi, this is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, Mitch.
Hi.
I'd like to say that I think they've avoided arbitration because they fared badly in the past with arbitration, as I recall.
Well, they did back in the old days, but, you know, it's a new climate now.
Well, I think arbitrators are fairly liberal, and I think if you go to arbitration, the union's going to come in with a higher demand than they would otherwise, and the board feels they can do better by negotiating with the union than they could by relying on an arbitrator.
Well, I don't know. The arbitrator has to vote yes or no on what's on the table. They can't add.
Yeah, but if the union feels you're going to an arbitrator, they would come in with a higher demand.
Well, then you might as well just grab your ankles at that point, Jim. I mean, you know, you've got to at some point say, this is a reasonable proposal. We don't have any more money. I mean, but see, the board doesn't ever do that. And the money that we're spending for operating costs, 84% goes to salaries and benefits. That's where the money goes. So if you can't deal with that part of it, then you're forget it. Or then we're going to go to a referendum every year, every 2 years, forever.
Try, but I suspect they're going to lose.
Well, you know what? They don't try, though. See, that's the point. And then they want us to give them more money. Thanks. Let's go to Maria. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. You were great last night.
Oh, Maria, you're a wonderful person.
The Ivory Room, oh, really. What a talented man. On this issue, we are small business owners and had to really hunt for affordable insurance and did 30 years ago with GHC. I don't want this to be an ad for GHC.
Group
but
health,
I got to tell you, if you can pay less, and I can't go to anybody else to help me pay for my insurance, you're forced find something affordable. We've been with them for over 30 years. They are fabulous. I just came from a small business advisory council, which is an arm of the chamber in the mayor's office, and one of the things we've pushed through is chamber care, an affordable health care system that can help our businesses, small and large, and GHC came on top again. Now, why doesn't the school district look at this?
Well, they do look at it, but they didn't have the votes last time. It was 4-3, by the way. It was closer last time than in previous years. You did have three members voting to put arbitration on the table, at least, but they didn't have enough votes.
Well, the money is too accessible, that's what I say. If it wasn't even possible to be there, they'd be forced to get something more reasonable.
All right, Maria.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Craig. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Craig.
Hi, Mitch. You know, we always hear the economy is bad and people are getting laid off, wages are down, tax collections are down, and yet these people continually want to be insulated from this, and they always want to raise. And I'd like to know, we give them everything they want. What do the kids and the taxpayers get in return from them?
Well, you know, there are people that are getting a great education. For instance, Memorial, I think 2 years ago, had the most gifted students at the highest level of any individual high school in the state, believe it or not, even though you have these stories about police cars every once in a while. Keep in mind that when that's happening, people in the classes don't even know it. You've got a lot of excellent teachers. You've got a lot of excellent programs out there. We're talking about some of the structural issues here, both on the funding source and on the spending side. But, you know, yeah, the quality of the programs, there should be a cost-benefit analysis of everything, no question. But, I mean, to say that it's all horrible, Craig, I don't think is right either. Is that your point, that, you know, everything is bad?
All right. Everybody has to tighten their belts except them. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Thanks, Craig, for the call. There's definitely a lack of backbone on the part of the school board. I think Matthews would agree with that because he always wins. Let's go to Sue. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention that I have three kids in school, and you mentioned earlier that senior citizens have to tighten their belts. But, you know, with three kids in school, I have to tighten my belt. And so the teachers have to tighten their belt as well. And the other point is, we're members of Group Health Cooperative. My mm-hmm. husband works for the state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We love it.
Yeah, the insurance is great, isn't it?
It is. We had three kids, three kind of difficult pregnancies, three C-sections. I never paid a penny. Never paid a penny.
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, come on.
I know, and then my husband had back problems. Never paid a penny. We love it. The doctors are great. Pediatricians are great. Loved it.
And it's $1,000 a month less.
That's right.
$1,000 a month.
That's right. You know,
Okay. Thank you. You're right, Sue. We're out of time, unfortunately. But you make the point. Have some backbone, board of school board members. Another calls on this when we come back. Also, robbing Peter to pay Paul, a judge is going to rule on the governor doing that. And more on that. That's also important. It's outside the box.